And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3,657 of the Survival Podcast. And today we're going to have kind of a variety show, kind of a combination of a current events show, talking about a few things, and then at the end of the show, we will do listener questions. And I'll probably prompt the live stream audiences, they trickle in here at the beginning a few times, to add to those questions. It's going to be kind of an ask me anything for the live stream folks. If you're listening to this on audio, like, how did I become one of these live stream folks? Well, you have to have enough freedom from your job or whatever to, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday anyway, be available to watch or at least listen on YouTube is probably the best place to do it, because that's where I definitely will see your comments. So I see the Facebook comments come in as well. To my back end. And so you have to be available in that time frame. And that's going to be somewhere between 11 and 12 that we're going to start most days. Some days we end up starting around 1300 because, well, I get delayed or something like that. And then the show will run an hour to 2 hours from that point. So you have to have the time freedom. But the best way to make sure you know it's going to happen is to get on the Telegram channel or the Telegram group, either one of those, and then don't mute it. And I do send out announcements every day, usually an hour or two before the show, what we're talking about, what time it's going to be, and all of the places you can go watch or listen. With that, what are we going to talk about today? Well, I've got a really good lineup for you guys today. One, we're going to talk about tariffs again. And I did a show recently. We went deep dive into some of the effects of the tariffs. But there's a big myth, and I don't have the link in the notes yet. I'll try to remember to add it. But Mark Moss yesterday dropped a great piece on this. I don't completely agree with Mark on it, but I would say 95% I agree on it. You're not going to pay all of the tariff. The customer doesn't pay all of the tariff. I know that you want to believe that. I know that's what the TV tells you. I know that's what the purest libertarians tell you. But we're missing some economic reality in this whole concept. I'm sorry, but we are. And I'll explain it. And when I explain it, you'll be like, well, that makes sense. It doesn't mean tariffs are good. It doesn't necessarily mean they're bad. It just means that what you're being told shockingly isn't true. And if you want to understand them, you should look deeper. And on that, we'll kind of hit on a little thing that, you know, the left obviously hates tariffs. And they obviously hate tariffs because it's Trump. It's not because the left hates tariffs innately. The left has been screeching and screaming for tariffs for 30 years. They had presidents that didn't put them in even when they were Democrats, but they always talked about it. But the left should love tariffs. Why? Because tariffs, honestly, now when we get into and I'll hit this when we cover these segments, when we start talking about like 180, 200% tariffs on China, some of this goes out the window. But in the end, when you're doing like 10, 20% tariffs, you know who you're tariffing? You're tariffing big evil corporations. I know you don't believe that either. Wait till we get to it. It'll make sense, right? Next up, Real ID. I've been getting a lot of shit about Real ID. Oh my God, Jack, look what they're doing. Bush did it. Trump's enforcing it. Not exactly true. Not exactly true. This has been building for a long time. If you're in Texas and you've renewed your license in about the last 5 years, you have a Real ID. In most states, I think it's all a gold star. Like if you pull your driver's license out right now and you look at your driver's license, and somewhere on the like front corner of your license, there's a gold star. You have a Real ID. The biggest voice against this in the Congress right now is Thomas Massey, whom I love. But Thomas Massey is from the state of Kentucky, where Real ID is not optional on renewing your driver's license. So Thomas Massey, who's opposed to Real ID, has a Real ID. I will tell you why. Real ID isn't a good thing. And there's not like there can't be any bad from it, but almost all of the bad from it doesn't require Real ID for that bad to happen from your government. It's not a secret plot to take over the whole country and put you in a camp. And it doesn't track you, okay? Just wait till we get to it. Maybe it'll make sense. Some of you it won't make sense because you don't want it to. Next, I've been seeing a ton of arguing about the $10,000 Toyota truck. You know, it's going to come here and we're going to be able to buy a $10,000 Toyota truck. It's kind of built on the Hilux model. Eventually is a new version of the Hilux. They're just not calling it that. And people, well, it's not any good anyway because it only comes in a 5-speed. Well, I guess if you can't drive a friggin' stick shift, that's true. It doesn't have a box. By the time you add a box, it'll cost just as much as a Ford. No, it won't. You can do a box on the back of a flatbed for a hell of a lot less than the cost of a freaking F-150 to have you price point. Here's the thing. Well, I'm not going to tell you. We'll get to why we shouldn't even be arguing about it, you know, when we get to that segment. And then the left is upset over something that I can't believe. Like, I shouldn't be surprised by anything, but the plight of human traffickers. Yeah, since the border's closed, there's this whole, like, economic collapse that happened in a place called the Darien Gap. I'll tell you what that is if you don't know. And the left is concerned it's America's fault that their economy collapsed because they can't make money ferrying people through the Darien Gap anymore. Like I said, really? This is like we're responsible for providing an economy by allowing. It's true. It's real. It's on the AP, Associated Press. And then I got listener questions. We got questions on food production on a patio, whether or not you should make sure you level your raised beds before you fill them. Short answer on that one is yeah, huh? But I'll tell you why. Am I still crushing my biochar with the feed bag method? And if so, why? And will the U.S. really turning into a complete dictatorship? Like, do we all need to be freaked out, or is the United States still the best place to live? And this is going to blend in with something that I call prepper maturity. I was already going to talk about that, and I just got this question from this guy's wife who's gone to the dark place. And I was already going to, you know, as I was set up and preparing for this show last week, and knowing I would do it, I was already going to talk about this dark place thing. That when preppers mature, they either become very stabilized or they go to the dark place. And I'll tell you how this relates to a young man who's cutting trees on my property for me right now. Anyway, with all of that, before we go ahead and dive into all these subjects, let's hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Above Phone. Above Phone is awesome. They are a way that you can take back your technology, stop those app manufacturers, the device manufacturers, and the carriers. All of them spy on you, collect your data, report it to the government, sell it to corporations. It seems like there's nothing you can do if you want to live on grid, but you can. You can actually take back your technology with Above Phone. They have great phones that run the Graphene OS pre-installed for you. And as you're making the conversion over from an iPhone user or an Android user that's using conventional service or what have you, they actually will give you a free consultation over the phone and walk you through how to transition over to your phone. But you also want to check out the Above Book. It is the laptop that provides the security and privacy that you're looking for. And I'm pretty stoked. Let's switch back to the full view here for a minute. I just got my Above Book right here. I just got it yesterday in the mail. I'm pretty stoked about it. It is an awesome looking piece of hardware. I haven't even fired it up yet, but I've got time set aside today after the show to start moving my online life over to the Above Book. I'm actually more excited about this than the phone. And that's probably because I don't leave the house much and I don't use my phone for very many things other than shooting videos on the property. But this is something that with my business and my life, I am on a daily basis. So I'm really excited about the Above Book. You might want to check them out. And remember, they have a great discount for MSB members, $75 off any phone at Above Phone. Next up today is Joel Riles with K9 Academy. Man, first of all, I just want to tell you, Joel is like a really good friend, like a personal friend. And those of you that know how I feel about using the word friend, I don't use that word lightly or easily. And he and his wife are both friends of not just myself, but my wife. They're the kind of people we kind of always wish they lived closer, where we could actually hang out. And so I trust Joel, and I've gotten to know Joel really well. And I can tell you that if you want to learn to be a great trainer of your dog so that you have dogs that are good citizens of your home, your homestead, your house, and no matter what you want it, your dog to be, whether you just want like a well-behaved dog that doesn't eat your chickens or whatever, or it doesn't jump on people, or if you want a dog that actually is a guardian dog, or you want a dog that is a protection dog, whether that means going with you everywhere and being your personal protection dog like the dogs he trains, or if you want it just like on your property to know how to defend the property, no matter what you want to do, it all starts with core canine obedience. So get over to K9Academy.us and check out all of the course options, but definitely consider signing up for that one because it will help you become better at training your dog. And the hardest thing for a professional dog trainer ever to do isn't train the dog. Like, no matter what you think your problem is, that trainer can probably fix that dog quick. It's training the person that's going to handle the dog because dogs are just more predictable and more conditionable than humans. And humans tend to get all these weird ideas, and it kind of messes up the canine brain. Anyway, with that, one more thing I want to tell you about before we dive into these topics today, just remind you that the Laws of Life book is coming. I am very excited about this. I poured, you know, a lot into this book. It's based on 30 years of lived experience and this just crushing desire I had when I was young to be successful, to be more. Going back to when I was a young soldier, going back to when I worked, you know, as a part-time kid working in a junkyard, I wanted more. After I got out of the military, I came to Texas and I got a job packing boxes for $6 an hour. No college degree or anything like that. My profession from the military was a mechanic. I didn't want to do that anymore, but I wanted something more. And so I set out on this journey to build the success that my life eventually became. And this, if I could write a letter to Jack Spirko, you know, getting out of the military in 1993 with that dream and say, hey, this is the way to get there and not step by step by step, but the way to think, the philosophy of life, the ethics, the morals, the drive, the fortitude. Like, this is what you need. This is what I would have written to myself. And I want to give this to as many people as possible because when I was young, I was so hungry for this that I just wish somebody would tell me. And it turned out people were telling me everywhere I turned that I just wasn't quite ready to hear some of it yet. So I consolidated all of this. I also have an ambassador program that's already going really well. The positions that are available for that are filling up. You can learn all about it. There's a link in the video notes, or you can just go to the Survival Podcast. And right up to launch day, which will be May 12th, I'm going to keep it either at the top or within one or two stories from the top. Each day I'll change the publish date on it and keep it up there for you. You can learn all about it. But we are filling up the ambassador slots really quick. Especially the platinum one, which is kind of surprising because it's the most expensive one to be part of. And we will be taking them off the form as they become unavailable. I will be updating it. But I'm going to say this. I'm not infallible. I can screw up. So if somebody gets into a position before we take it down, we'll honor it. If we end up with like one or two extras, then that's what it is. But when they're gone, they're gone. And I still would like you to share my book with others. All right. So let's hit this. And let's start off with the claim that the customer pays the tariff. I mean, I'm going to tell you exactly the way that I've heard this presented on the news. Right when the tariff talk started, and it wasn't really about China, right? It was when the Canadian stuff started. And there are a lot of cars that are made in Canada and then shipped to the United States. And there's also a lot of parts for cars made in Canada, that those parts are then shipped to the U.S. and maybe assembled in Texas or Tennessee or Kentucky. We have, you know, automotive plants all over the country, more than people realize, I think. But often, like, what are built in America cars are, whether they are American brands or like Toyota or Hyundai or some of the stuff that's built in America that is a foreign car or a foreign brand, we think of as an American built car. It's really a bolt together in America. The engine is from this, you know, Mexico, and this is from Canada and all. And the way they describe that is, so if you have a truck and it's $75,000 and it's built in Canada, then it immediately becomes a $100,000 truck in America, and all of that expense goes through to the consumer. You know, with a big ticket item like a truck or a car that are already sold on somewhat thin margins, that can be more true than some other stuff. But even it's not even true there. But if you think about the majority of shit that comes into this country that's imported, it's not big ticket items. It's stuff that people buy every day. But I mean, another part of it is it tends to not be needs in that you have to buy the one that comes from country XYZ. You know, a T-shirt, for instance. Well, T-shirts are made in Vietnam. They're made in El Salvador. They're made in the Philippines. And, yes, they're made in China, and they're made in Malaysia, and they're made in Singapore. So there are options that the importer has to choose where to source their items. It's first of all. Second of all, since they're not needs, it's most of our food is not imported, for instance, right? Certain things are coffee, avocados, et cetera. But in general, most of our food is not imported. The staples that you need to live on are not imported. And because of that, people can make decisions. So the idea that if we take, you know, something, an iPhone case, right, and we put a 25% tariff on it, that the way this is being reported is that case just instantly goes up 25% in value. Now, I actually had a question, I mean, minutes before I started today from somebody, like, with all the tariffs, why aren't the prices going up yet? Well, first of all, most of the tariffs didn't actually go into effect in any real way or meaningful way, other than China. Okay, the other reason for the guy that asked that question is because there's so much inventory already in the country. And people knew this was coming, so since the importer pays the tariff, understand that, right? So if Walmart's dealing directly with China, some export company or whatever, and they're buying a whole bunch of shit, Walmart pays the tariff to the United States government. They don't pay it to China, they pay it here. And the Chinese ship the product, and they don't really directly pay the tariff at all. That's the true part. But that's not how the real world works. So if, let's say, let's take a different country other than China right now, because the numbers there are so stupid that that's where it breaks a little bit. But let's say we're importing from the Philippines, and we normally had a 5% tariff on goods from the Philippines, and now we have a 20% tariff, so that's 15% more, so the product's going to cost 15% more. No, that's not how that works. You still have to get people to buy your shit all the way through. So what's going to happen is Walmart, for instance, is going to say to their suppliers in the Philippines, hey, man, we can't eat 15% on this. Y'all have to give us a better underlying price. And then as that underlying price goes down, the actual total number or value of that 20% tariff is reduced. Well, when they do that, the guy that's selling it, the exporter, is not the manufacturer in general. Usually, like, they're combining a bunch of shit, put it on one ship, and all out it goes. So they're going to go back into their supply chain and tell all the people they buy from, you got to give us a better fucking deal. Then, after that happens, those people that manufacture, if they have any supply chain of their own, they're going to push back on that. So the underlying cost of the product is going to go down. Because if it was as simple as, well, Walmart's just going to add 20% to the cost of all the shit from China or Philippines or wherever, wouldn't they just do it now? Like, if you could just raise the price and everybody would still buy it, wouldn't you just do it? Well, of course you would. So I don't know if you've ever dealt with a company like Walmart or Costco, et cetera, as a supplier, but they have people who are trained to beat you up harder on price all the time anyway. Then let's say the aggression of a military recruiter with someone with a good ASVAB score. Man, they are ruthless in the way that they negotiate. And they're going to turn that negotiating apparatus on their suppliers. They're not just going to accept the total cost. They will then, once they have the product, if they want to sell it to you, and it's not something you absolutely have to buy, they may have to take a bit of a haircut on their margin too. And in the like worst case scenario, with anything other than an absolute necessary product, you're more looking at like what Mark Moss says, the consumer may pay no actual additional cost. You know what? If it's 10 or 15% more, he might be right. But if it's much more than that, you're probably looking at something like the exporter having to cut their price by about a third. The importer having to, when they flip the product, reduce their margin by a third, and the maximum impact is about one third of the rise in price to the consumer. That's probably a worst case scenario, and most situations it will be less impact than that. Does this make sense? I hope it does. If it doesn't make sense, you don't want it to. This isn't advocation for tariffs. This isn't that tariffs are okay. This is just how the math works. This is how the real world works. You can't just raise my price, you know, and then I'm just going to say, okay. I'm going to push back. I'm going to seek alternatives for supply. I'm going to tell the guy in China that I've been dealing with for the past 15 years, listen, man, I don't like what happened to you, but I also don't give a fuck. I'm pricing out the same production to Vietnam. I'm pricing it out to the Philippines. I'm pricing it out to Singapore. I'm pricing it out to Mexico. I'm pricing it out to frickin' Colombia. I'm pricing it out to anybody that can possibly make this thing. But Jack, there's specialized stuff in China, like phones. Yeah, it's not tariffed. It's not tariffed. They exempted the shit that we really can't get from somewhere else right now anyway. You understand that? There are certain technical expertise that exist in China that do not exist in other markets that we can buy from at the low cost. Most of those products have been exempt. And again, some of you, the special people in the audience, you think I am telling you tariffs are good, don't worry about it. No, I'm telling you that the way it's being reported is dishonest. It's dishonest. It is not a direct proportional expense to the consumer. It isn't, because the fucking market will not allow for that. If I was an importer right now and I'd been getting my shit from China and I was selling shit like cigar humidors and cigar cutters and shit, first thing I would have done is bought myself time. And this is why the prices haven't immediately jumped. Because this was the most telegraphed punch since the first Gulf War. Like, the first Gulf War was like a 6-month telegraphed punch. We were going to hit Baghdad on this day, 6 months before it happens, right? This was not quite 6 months. It was more like 90 to 100 days of knowing, and Trump did enough fucking around for you to find out, to know he wasn't bullshitting. And especially, you knew that you should have known that China was in the crosshairs the hardest. If I was selling that kind of shit and my business was solid, I would have ordered as much fucking inventory as I could afford to buy before the tariffs hit. And I would get that. Once that shit is paid and it's into the country, there is no tariff on it. It's now an American product, if you want to call it that, even though it's not an American source product. And so these companies did exactly that. They took out large lines of credit, et cetera. And the reason you've actually seen some of this shit go down in price, I mean, I've brought you some good deals on some products recently that are all manufactured in China. Some of them overdid it. And they know they overdid it. And they also know that there is a deflationary market going on right now, and there's going to be opportunities to invest, and they want to convert the inventory into capital because – monetary capital, because monetary capital is king in this environment. It's also leverageable into more loans. So if I can convert $10 million worth of product into $10 million worth of capital, and then I can take $10 million worth of capital, I could probably go borrow $100 million and leverage that to build out new infrastructure under this new economic model. That's exactly what these tariffs are supposed to do. It's exactly what they're going to do. Does that mean it'll work out perfectly? Absolutely not. There is nothing that government can do that will ever work out the way that government plans. They're the most incompetent people in the world on some levels. And if it can be fucked up or corrupted, it will be. It doesn't mean that every time they do everything, it means things will get worse. The more they do tends to get worse. But we've been doing things the way that we're supposed to now, right? We're just going along and get along. America's being the nice guy, leaving our borders open. Even back in the 80s, we were mostly leaving our fucking borders open. We'll get to that in a minute. Paying these stupid fucking tariffs, right, and having our goods tariffed heavily to export our markets, allowing these fucking countries to float their currency any fucking way they want to against the dollar while they're playing this fucking game, VAT tax the shit out of our product, creating multiple layers. This is something else you don't understand. There's tariffs that they don't call tariffs that make your product that you're trying to sell into another country more expensive. You can, like, some countries actually do this. Okay, if you import from America, you have to go through a two-step distribution process rather than directly to the retailer. You have to have like a wholesaler and then a warehouse company sell. That adds two layers. And if country has VAT tax, and that VAT tax is, let's say, 8%, that just puts 16% effectively like a tariff on the product, while they can say, but our tariff's only 5%. And there's all kinds of ways they play those games. And as much as I can find things to criticize about Trump, dude figured this shit out, and they're closing those loopholes in these deals that they're making. So we'll see where it goes. But just understand, when you hear somebody say, well, if they add a 25% tariff to Canada's cars, then that truck just went up $25,000 if it's a $75,000. It's going to be basically $100,000. It's a lie. It's just not true. Moving on, I just want to point out, based on what I just told you, shouldn't the left love tariffs? If you said to the average lefty Democrat, should we increase the tax on Walmart by 25%. If they're at, if the corporate rate is 20, should we raise it to 35? Yeah, of course we should. Okay. If the consumer is the one that, like, did the Democrats finally figure this out, right? That when you tax a company, that the consumer bears the burden of your taxation of the company to a degree? Because how is it any different? If Walmart has to pay 25% import tariff, or if Walmart's taxes in general go up 25%, there's a little variance in there because they have some control over what they report as profit and how they spend money before they pay tax on it. But at some point, you get into a kind of a similar – because if you said to these same leftists right now shrieking about these tariffs, should we increase Walmart's corporate tax rate to 70%? Most of those retards would say yes. And that's way worse than a tariff. That does not allow for the market to correct the imbalanced bullshit because it's directly apportioned to all goods sold to all corporations at the same rate at that point, right? Where if you're tariffing goods, you can impact behavior and create a guild. Hang on to that word because we're going to talk about it again in another point. But you can create a guild around the United States that allows the development of more production of goods in the country. That's the attempt. Again, I'm not saying it'll work. That's what they're trying to do. But in the end, if Walmart pays the tariff, then Walmart's paying the tax. And most of the people shrieking about the tariff would love to tax Walmart and don't understand what's happening. If you think I'm wrong about that, go check it out. Go have a conversation with AI about it or something. Maybe you'll find out. It'll tell you that because it's biased, it'll tell you the end user. But give it all that feedback and see what happens. Next, let's talk about Real ID. I want to be brief in this one. And I know that I'm going to get emails from special people. And when I read your email, I'll just hear your angry hen pecking typing. I'm so angry at you. I thought you were an anarchist. Like, shut up. I'm not telling you the way things should be. I'm telling you the way things are and what that means. I'm the freaking weatherman, or I'm the announcer calling balls and strikes at a game. Okay? And that means that I cannot like something, and I can also go, yeah, but it isn't what all these people are saying about it. So Real ID was passed by George H.W. Bush back in 2005. When it came out, I think Pam Bondi announced that starting next month, basically, you're going to need a real ID to fly on U.S. flights or a passport. Okay, here's the thing. A passport is a real ID. So if you have a passport, you have a real ID. If you take your driver's license out of your wallet right now and you look at it and there's a gold star on the front of it, unless there's a state that has that when it's not real ID star, it's a different star that I don't know about, then you have real ID. And most of you probably already have one. And if you don't, in most states, when you renew your license the next time, even if you did it way back when you first got your license, when you were 16 and now you're 40, you're going to have to go into the DMV with your birth certificate on renewal. You won't just be able to take your old ID and use it to prove you are who you say you are. It's stupid. It was a pain in the ass for me. I didn't enjoy the inconvenience, but when I left the DMV with my new license, there wasn't a freaking drone following me or something stupid like that. That's not what it does. What does it do? The real IDs first require verification that you really are who you say you are and an American citizen. And by the way, some of you screaming about that, isn't that what you want us to do with voting? Think about that, because that's going to tie back into why Trump may be okay with this right now. Because they're trying to pass a law that says proof of citizenship is required when you register to vote, which Real ID would do. Just saying. And then once you have this Real ID, well, what does it mean? Well, you're in a central database. Do you have a Social Security card? Well, yeah, shut the fuck up. You're already in a central database. Do you pay your taxes? Yeah, okay, shut the fuck up. You're already in a central database. Do you think that there's anybody in this country, especially born here, that the United States government doesn't know exactly who you are? Like, because now they'll know. They'll know what? That you exist? Did you serve in the military? Yeah. Then really shut up. Do you have a government job? Shut up. Do you have a security clearance of any kind? Have you ever had one? Shut up. Have you ever been arrested? Even if you were found not guilty? Shut up. Like, What is this magical difference of this database, supposedly? Okay, and the answer is there isn't one. What the real ID is there certain mandates in the law. Now, again, I don't like this. I don't think we should do this. I don't think we need this. But what is it? The ID itself has like a hologram and certain anti-counterfeit features. And they required the states to upgrade to these features. And the states, some of the states pushed back. We don't want to do this. It'll take too long, cost too much money. You didn't appropriate enough funds so that we can modify our systems, whatever. And so that's why it took from 2005 to 2025 to get enough states on board for the federal government to actually enforce the law that they passed 20 years ago. And some states have said, we'll make it optional. You don't want a real ID, you ain't got to have one. So when I put this all on X, this is what I got from people. You didn't understand. I have to pay an extra $60 to get a real ID in New York, or I can opt out and pay the same price I normally pay. So I'm like, well, that's fucked up. You shouldn't have to do that. But I was also like, self, does that seem like bullshit to you? And I was like, it does. I don't think a state can do that. That doesn't make sense. Maybe I'm wrong. I should go find out. So I looked up what the state of New York said about this, and it turned out the number, first of all, wasn't 60. It was 30. So I don't know where this person got the number 60 from. Maybe it was because they had a CDL. And maybe what I'm about to explain cost double for a CDL, because they do that shit to people with CDLs other than a standard license. But the additional money in New York, and some states have this, Texas doesn't, I don't think, I didn't check. That's for what's called an enhanced license, which conforms to the Real ID Act. But what it also does is allow you to go to Canada and Mexico and many Caribbean nations without a passport. So if you want that convenience, you pay an extra $30 per five-year term. But if you want a real ID in New York, you just say, I want a real ID, and they give you one. You do have to go in. You do have to prove you are who you say you are again, which is dumb, but that's what it is. Or you can just, you know, sooner or later, they make you go in anyway. It's like in Texas, it's every 12 years. You have to go in, prove you can still see, that you're still here, whatever. But normally you just go in with your old driver's license, and since that was their ID for you, it was good. Now you have to one more time reprove, here's my birth certificate. That's it. And there were other people that said similar things, like they're going to charge, every place I checked into it, you are not being charged more. Now there might be one, I don't know, states like to grift. States like you're in Pennsylvania, they said, they cost you more. I did not find that to be true. I could be wrong. So if your state is a grifting state, maybe they are charging an upcharge fee or something for this, you know, which they really shouldn't be. But what do you think you're going to do? Well, here's what I've heard. Well, once they have everybody with real ID, then they can decide if you don't have a real ID, there's other things you can't do, like, you know, open a bank account or buy food or whatever. Like all of that Orwellian shit, if it's going to happen, you holding your breath on this is not going to stop it. Anybody that believes that, I don't understand. I think people are just making a big deal about this because it's something to make a big deal about. Again, do I like it? No. Am I concerned about it? I am concerned about it, but if I made a list of 100 things I'm concerned about, and number one was the thing I'm most concerned about, and number 100 was the thing I'm least concerned about, it would be somewhere above 95 in the things that I'm worried about in my daily life. I am much more worried about being a good grandfather than fucking real ID. And if we were to do something like have a state become a nation, then you'd already have one with that state. I don't know what buffer people think they have because, well, my driver's license from the state of Alabama isn't real ID. All you've done is inconvenience yourself, in my opinion. And you've taken extra steps to inconvenience yourself. You can do what you want, but there's an out. If your state allows the out, then you can get a passport. And then the passport becomes real ID. Now, I was told by somebody that they went to their state to get the real ID. And as a form of identification, they took the passport, which is federally compliant with real ID, with them. And the DMV said, that's not good enough. We need your birth certificate. First of all, if you don't have your birth certificate, get a fucking copy of it because there's times when you need it. But second of all, that should be good enough. You should check on your state's website to see if it is, if you're in that position and you want to take care of it on your DL. And it could be that just the person that they talked to was an idiot because the DMVs of various states do hire idiots. But if you want to worry about this, go ahead. I'm not gonna. And if you think this is the thing that enables America to become Nazi Germany, there might not be any help for you. You should really listen to the second half of the show today, because we're going to get into some of the prepper dark place stuff. Now, the Toyota truck that everybody's arguing about. Now, this wasn't really, nobody wrote me about this, but I've been seeing this go on social media. And this is the truck that's going to sell, if you're on the video, for about $10,000. Not the wholesale price or price to the dealer. Like, this is the target price MSRP. And it's a pretty damn nice truck for $10,000. It's also bare bones to shit. It doesn't even have a tachometer in it. It's got like a speedometer and that's it. It doesn't have air conditioning. The windows crank up and crank down like an old school truck. It's got an inline four that ain't got much. Like, you've probably seen some UTVs that have as much horsepower as this thing. But as a farm truck, as a daily driver, as a beater truck, but it's brand new, so it won't have any problems. Easy to maintain. This thing's pretty damn nice. Standard cab only. And this one's shown with fold-down rails to make a box. The $10,000 one would look more like that, just a flatbed. And then things like the side rails, there are some upgrades that Toyota will have for this. But even like the most loaded one might sell for $14,000-$15,000. And I don't even know if it will have the option to go from a manual 5-speed to an automatic. But I like automatics. I'm not an old school, you know, Gen X prude. I think everybody should be able to drive a stick. But sticks in city traffic on the interstate suck when you have stop and go shit. So I'm a fan of automatics. I don't think I'd want this truck with the engine that's in it in an automatic, though. Those gears give you power beyond the conventional horsepower of the motor. There's an old saying, if you put the right gearing in a washing machine, it would go over a mountain for you with some wheels on it. So I think you'd be better off with a manual in this particular truck. So there's been a bunch of arguing about it. Is it really worth it? You're not really going to buy it when it gets here. And somehow this myth started that this truck was coming to America, probably because people wanted to engagement farm and do stupid shit on social media. So it took me all of 13 seconds to look this article up and find out about it. Again, it's on Road and Track. And I'm going to just, no plan. There it is. Oh, it was right in front of me the whole time. See what that says right there? And there are no plans to sell this truck in the United States, although it will be sold in Mexico. So if you want to buy one, you can go to Mexico and buy it, but I don't think you'll be able to bring it in the United States. And I'm going to tell you why I don't think they plan on bringing it here. And it ain't tariffs. It's our stupid regulations. This vehicle, I highly doubt, would be street legal in the United States. And while some of the things that make a vehicle no longer street legal in California from an emission standpoint can get somewhat of a waiver, I'm not even aware of a commercial vehicle being sold in, let's say, Florida that doesn't pass California emissions standards, because a manufacturer doesn't want to make a California compliant version of the F-150 and the rest of the country. So pretty much California dictates the safety and emission standards in vehicles in the United States. And even if you threw California into the ocean, which may not be a bad idea altogether, that vehicle wouldn't be street legal in the United States based on federal regulations and safety requirements and emission requirements for vehicles in the country. It might actually pass the emissions. I'm not sure. But there are other things and safety features that are now required of all vehicles that it doesn't have. And just to get it to that level and bring it into the United States, you'd probably jack the price up to about 16. And by the time you paid the dadgone tariffs on it because of the class of vehicle it is, you're into the mid-20s on it, and I'm sorry, that truck isn't worth it. If you're willing to spend $20,000 on a pickup truck, you can go buy two of them for $8,000 a piece, spend $16,000, buy two used trucks that will outperform that truck. Is that truck worth $10,000? I would order one with a freaking online click of a button delivered to my house for $10,000 this week if I could get it and drive it on the streets in America. If I could get it for $10,000 and somebody said it would make a really good ranch truck. If I had a big piece of property, let's say 40, 50 acres or more with some trails on it and all, $10,000, I would buy that and I would either do it myself or put or get the rails with it where it basically makes the bed. Because that, if you look at a UTV, a good quality UTV that gets even close to what that truck would do for you, you're at 12, 14 grand. But it's not worth arguing about because it's not coming here. So stop it. If you're one of the people arguing about the validity of this truck, it's irrelevant to your life unless you plan to move to Mexico and stay there. Now, if you're going to move to Mexico, buy a ranch down there, which I have to admit I have thought about from time to time in my life, and it's not actually that hard for an American to do, then that would be a great ranch truck. And I think that's where it would excel as a ranch truck, and it would excel as like a contractor vehicle in city town environments as well, because it's small, it's compact, and get in and out, it's good on gas. And if you're hauling around shit like paint and ladders and stuff, like you're not hauling like rubble and giant rocks and super heavy loads, I mean, it would be a fantastic everyday work vehicle for the construction worker, the landscaper, towing a simple trailer with like a couple side, you know, a couple zero turn mowers on it, stuff. It has plenty of power to do that stuff. But we're not going to get it here. And so, but here's the thing, like, we need to get rid of the chicken tax, which is another tariff, and we're not in an environment to get rid of tariffs. What we should be asking is, why can't we build a truck for $10,000 in America? Why? Could Toyota not build that truck in America and make money on it, selling it for $10,000? If it won for regulations, it has nothing to do with labor costs, by the way. The new automotive plants, the amount of human labor that goes into a vehicle is a fraction of what it was 30 years ago. There is so much automation in it. And automation does need some maintenance and all, but it's pretty much a one-time investment with a very small maintenance budget to keep it going. There is no reason that we could not have factories in America cranking those things out. And maybe, okay, we can't sell for 10. Who here, if you would buy that truck as is for, let's say, 12.5, which is 25% more than it's going to sell for in Mexico and Thailand. Okay? So that's 25% premium. If you could buy that truck for $12,500, who here would either buy one or consider it? Put in the live stream, put buy one or consider it if you would be one or the other. There's a lag, so we'll see when that comes in. But I'd pay $12,500 for that truck, especially if it was street legal. Or if I had a big piece of property, I would pay $12,500 for that before I'd pay it for a side-by-side UTV. You got to be kidding me. It's not even a comparison. Really. Now, if you start looking at bringing that, like, because I've heard people, what if you self-import? You're looking at, by the time you're all said and done with delivery, $20,000. So I got considerate, buy it, consider it. See? There's a market for it. It could be built. Some people are talking about union labor costs. I don't give a fuck about union labor costs. That vehicle could be built somewhere where it doesn't apply. Why do you think there's so many automotive plants in Kentucky and Tennessee now? Because they get out from under the union thumb there. But keep that union gilding thing in mind. We're going to come back to that eventually. So now let's talk about something else. This is something that when you thought the media's bullshit for the left had reached an all-time high. There's an article out in the AP this week, which is the Associated Depressed, right? A jungle route once carried hundreds of thousands of migrants. Now the local economy has crashed. And when you read this article, what you'll get out of it is this sob story. See, there's this poor lady here. She used to be doing really well for herself. And you can tell she did really well because of the great living conditions she's in. Oh, wait, it only got that way in like the last 2 months, right? No. This is how she was always. And somehow she has a flat screen with Trump behind her. I feel like this is photoshopped in here. But the plight is that these people, they're so helpful. They used to guide migrants through the Darien Gap, okay, and tell them how to get across the rivers and stuff. And the Darien Gap ain't no joke. There's people that think like you could drive from here to Colombia. You cannot. There is no road through the Darien Gap. No, AP, I'm not giving you any freaking money, and you do not create strong democracy. The Darien Gap is a lot of jungle, tropical rainforest. It is tough, and there's a lot of ways that things can go wrong when you are trying to get through the Darien Gap into Panama, and then through Panama. Once you get into Panama, there are roads that go all the way to the United States, but there is no road where you see where these people are crossing here. But the whole thing's a sob story. Because of mean old Trump, we collapsed the economy in the Darien Gap. See, the Darien Gap people were making lots of money for the location because immigration was so easy to accomplish in the United States. So there was a huge market for guides along the way. And, you know, guide A would take them a little bit, hand them off to B, to C, and they'd have to pay like a tariff, right, every way through until they immigrated and imported themselves to the United States. And then we ruined that economy because we actually enforced our border. And people say this with a straight face. Are you absolutely kidding me? But there, if you're not an idiot, there's a bigger message, a bigger economic message in this story, a bigger economic lesson in this story. If you read the whole article, which is hard to do because it's long, it's like, it's hard for me to believe people get paid to write dribble like this crap, but you know, these are professional writers, and this is like a treatise. It's like a freaking couple chapters of a book in length. But the upshot is, well, see, what these poor people did is they had all their little agricultural businesses, and they were producing mangoes, and they were doing all their little cottage industry things, but it didn't pay that good. So a few years ago, when Biden opened the border, it was a boom town all of a sudden in the middle of the jungle, and it was so much more profitable to hold people by the hand and take them for a walk than it was to do the hard work of like growing food and making crafts and things like that, that they all abandoned it. And therefore, when the mean orange man shut the border down, everything collapsed. And now they don't have anything because they let everything go that they already had. You know what that tells you? When there is a short-term gain to be made, you can participate in the short-term gain, but you better not let go of the long-term revenue stream that you run your life with. This was like people that, you know, went to a silver or a gold boom town in the 1800s of the United States and set up a mercantile and sold picks and shovels to the miners. That's all good and well, but eventually that mine's going to be empty, and you better have a plan for what's on the other end of it. That's the economic lesson of this, but I guess the social lesson is that the left has no bottom. There's no bottom to what the left has at all. It's just bottomless as to where they'll go with telling stupid sob stories. Like, is there anybody out there listening? There's over 100 people on a live stream right now. Any of y'all feel bad for the people of the Darien Gap who like let their mango orchard get overgrown while they were ferrying illegal aliens through the Darien Gap? And you think it's our fault that they're not making, like, does anybody buy that? I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. Anyway, let's move on from there. Let's do some listener questions. So, and these are going to be, most of them, we're going to end kind of coming back to where we started with some of these things. But the first one is a very practical, kind of like urban homesteading question, and not even really urban, like super small. Ofer, who has been a part of this community forever, has been to several workshops here. He actually lives not far from here, I think, anyway. He wrote me, he said he recently decided to leave his house behind. He's getting an apartment. And so he's basically given away all his homesteading stuff that you need a house to have. And I think he's doing that on the TSP Telegram group. That would be another reason. You never know what opportunities come from being part of that community, so get in there. But he's like, I'm going to move to this apartment. I'm going to have a rather small patio. What can I do on the patio? He already kicked this idea back on me. He's not thrilled with it. But my honest answer for people doing that is, unless you are completely blessed with the exact right orientation and exposure solar-wise, it's going to be tough to do a really good job of any kind of high production in minimal space without some adjunctive lighting. And you might not need very much of it, but you probably need some of it. And what I would recommend somebody in that space do is focus on things like leafy greens, high dollar, quick turn, rapid production produce. And I would really recommend hydroponics and not aquaponics. There's a reason, I'll get to it. But if you want to do aquaponics in that situation, that's fine. Just know that when winter comes, you're basically going to shut it off and not use it. So I would say in this climate, you're looking at about November, and then you're going until about March. You just wouldn't have it running, and you would need to, like, at least to keep your fish alive, you would need to have some kind of supplemental heat and all. Where if you did hydro, and you design the system to, even if it takes a little, like it takes a couple hours to relocate it, you could just bring it indoors for that period of time, and you keep it out of your way, out on the patio for the whole growing season and bring it in. That would be one way that I would suggest doing this. The other way is container gardening. And this is really all you have available to you in that situation. It's why I don't talk about it much. It's not that I don't care about y'all that are in that situation. It's just there isn't much else that you really can do at home anyway. So you can either do container gardening or do something like hydro. The issue with container gardening is you're in the same situation. You have a shutdown period. That's okay. But just know that your production would be best coming from things that will quick turn and high value. Which is, again, we're back to leafy greens and stuff. You can have a tomato plant or a pepper plant or two, but you're only going to get so much production off of that, especially in that environment. And definitely consider some adjunctive plant lights. And the beauty of that is if you figure out that what you really need for these plants to do well is an extra 2 hours of light, you're only paying for the electricity during that 2 hours. And you might want to do it at the time, do it at the time when it's still light out, but you're in full shade. And those lights are timed to come on and go off and maybe overlap by about an hour on both sides. That would be another way to do it. Now, there are some other strategies, though. Where do you work? If you work close to home, does the place you work have room for essentially a community garden? Does your church have a community garden? Would your church like to have a community garden? Could your church be talked to about having a community garden that you become the overseer of the program? Is there any place that you can find around you to garden? Is there a person who you know, a friend you can make, who has property that's already a gardener that you could contribute to their efforts? Because if I had somebody that wanted to contribute to my gardening, I would as long as they knew what they were doing, I would probably be fine sharing some production with them, because there's a lot of little nitpicky shit through the growing season that if you spend more time on it, you get a lot more production. So those would be some other strategies. I would like to hear from y'all, though. What some of y'all that are in this situation, what are you doing? And some of you guys that maybe aren't, but you can come up with some ideas. And maybe we'll do a whole show on ultra small scale production. From a standpoint of animal based production, about the only thing I can see working in this situation would be quail. And I don't know, I don't know how you would deal with that. But I will say people keep parakeets and cockatiels and stuff like that inside houses all the time. But quail poop a lot. But, if you had even 6 females and no males, egg production would be good. I don't think in 99% of the situations, the idea of having a male and doing some meat production is going to work in an apartment. I just don't see it. The volume, I think you get into a stink issue. You've got something that makes a good compost, but you really don't have a place to compost it. Like, that is probably not going to work. Next up, though, let's talk about raised beds. So I had an email from a guy. He said, I just made my raised beds. They're sitting on the ground. They're really not level because the ground isn't level. Should I level them or should I not worry about it? I'm going to tell you that I'm not like super nitpicky anal about a lot of things. But even if it was just a little bit off and I can see it, it would bug me for the rest of my freaking life to have a raised bed going downhill, right? This way or vertical or horizontal. Like if I can really see it, every time I look at it, it would bug me. Even if it was not a sufficient angle to really cause a lot of erosive issues, which can happen, I'll get to that in a second, it would still bug me. So I would do it just aesthetically. And the reality is leveling a raised bed, before it is full is easy. And the way to do it is not to add fill to the low side, because then you need a lot more fill, because you have to disperse, so you don't have like this, like, right? Like you need, I guess you could do it with rock or brick or something, set the bed on top of it. But to me, the easy way actually helps you fill the bed. You take the high side and you drop the bed a little bit below ground level to level it. And you take the dirt that you pulled out to do that, you take a little bit and go around it to pack it back in so it stays put. And the rest of it, you throw it in the bottom of the bed. And that saves you on fill. Now, if you have any significant slope and you're doing any irrigation, what you will find is over a season, you will move material from the high side of the bed to the low side of the bed. So you'll have a heaped up on the low side and go down on the high side, because as the water moves across it, it's going to take material with it. And so I always level my beds, and I always level them when I install them. And I always do that because there will never be a time that is easier to do it. I will also tell you this. If you're like, I want to have irrigation to my beds, at minimum, run pipe to where the bed is going to be before you put the bed in place, and stub up a pipe inside the bed, put a cap on it, even if you don't do your irrigation right away, because that is going to be the easiest time to get that done as well. And I would say, if like I plan on expanding the bed, then I would have pipe that is easily tap into, easy to tap into as those additional beds get put in. Level and irrigation. Irrigation is the most important thing, unless you live in a place where you just don't have to irrigate hardly at all. Like, I got to tell you, when I lived in Pennsylvania, we would water the garden four times a summer. You know, you get some points where you do still get some dry weather. And like, you know, if you, but the soil was deep and there was so much reserve that you would go, like, you could go 10, 15 days of dry, warm weather before the plants started to be like, can I have some help? And so if that's your situation, if it's reliable that way anyway, you know, maybe you manually water. Everybody else, put in at least some form of ease of, like, what I call semi-automatic irrigation. So if you've never seen it, you can look up irrigation on my channel, and you should find the way I irrigate my gardens now. And it's just basically pipes that are laid out in a drip-like fashion. It's more like a squirt. And basically lay the pipes on the bed for coverage and use a really small drill bit and drill holes in the pipe. And then to that stub up, I just plumb on one of those orbit timers that you just turn. And so when I need to water my gardens, I just go out and turn it all to the time I want it to go. And that when the timer kicks off, the water stops. And that's, I really, really recommend that. Amy says crack key. She's talking about the last question. Crack key could be brought in during winter. Crack key hydro would probably be the best way to do outdoor hydroponics, or a very simple crack key like system. So you're using Rubbermaid tubs and stuff like that to grow, but just small air pumps. And if you have enough solar exposure, you could get really simple air pumps. They're made really for fishing, and they're pretty damn good. They're pretty damn impressive how well they work. And they're like $15-$20. And so just one long aquarium stone, the ones that are designed like to go all the way across and get this like window of bubbles, that inside a system, even if you're running it as Kratky, it's so low cost, and the improvement of production is huge. It's huge. And the one thing about Kratky is, once the water level goes down to a certain level, you want to maintain it there, and you don't want it to go any further, and you don't want to fill it back up because the root type has changed. If you get into that model, you have a little bit more forgiveness with it. It's like a Kratky aeroponics hybrid, and it would be a really, really good way to go. Next, I had a question on my biochar, and they said, are you still using the labor-intensive, gut-wrenching, very, very difficult and hard method of putting your biochar into a feed sack and driving a truck over it, and if so, why? I am, and the reason why is every attempt I've made to mechanize it, including using a chipper shredder, left something to be desired. When you get the moisture just right, dumping it through a chipper shredder works, and it works really good, and it's really easy, but it still makes a very dirty, hard to clean out, needed to be cleaned out, expensive chipper shredder. If you do not want to use my method, the best method that I have talked to people about that seems to work well is go out and buy yourself, it'll cost you about $300, the really good gas-powered steel leaf vacuum with the bag on it, with a very fine pour bag, and you just suck it up. And it goes into the bag, and it doesn't make a dust cloud because the bag contains it, and it's all. And I'm still going to tell you, I have to believe you're going to have the moisture level just right, but you might want to just let it dry all the way out, and then instead of trying to let it dry to the moisture you want, you could add the amount of moisture, and eventually you would be able to figure out for this much, use this much water. I guess that could work. One of the ideas I've had, and I may reach out to the Vore, and asked to review this product. And I'll have to be honest with my rep there, though, and tell her, I plan on doing something with it that it's not made for. Vore makes an automated flour mill, like for grinding corn and wheat and stuff like that. And it's not too expensive. And this might actually work. And I've watched people use it, and it has, like, some dust come out of it and all. And all the people that reviewed it said, basically, it ain't perfect, but it works. I do have people I know that put it, basically take a garbage disposal and mount it like on a fake table and run water through it and run it through a garbage disposal. All of this is messy. All of this seems fussy. The bag crush method is not that bad, and it's what's worked best for me, and it was screening it in between crushings that made it functional. And so what I've done now is I've taken the 21-gallon tubs that you get at like Home Depot and Lowe's. They sell for about $16-$18. They're made out of a really heavy-duty plastic, like a Rubbermaid plastic. And I cut holes, almost the whole bottom of them out, and I attached with screws, really bolts and nuts, so that it would hold right. I made one in 1/4-inch hardware cloth screen, and I made one in a half-inch screen. And so when the biochar comes out of the kiln, cools, it gets saturated, it gets cooled down, and it's ready to be crushed, what I do then, and you know, there's a question here, and I'm getting two questions. This is great. I forgot all about this. If you have a question, do it just like Jesse just did, and I'm open to any question today except about shitcoins, okay? You can ask me anything today because we're almost done and we have some time. So throw those questions at me from the live stream now. If you want to be part of this. Anyway, so when that char is ready to be crushed, the very first thing I do is I put it through the half-inch screen, and I just put one of those tubs with a couple pieces of wood on top of it on top of a tub that doesn't have holes in the bottom of it. And I knock it through the half-inch, and then I dump that and knock it through the quarter. Everything that comes through the quarter-inch screen is good. Doesn't need to be crushed. So it goes in buckets, and it goes away. It gets stored. For use, okay? All the stuff that went through the half-inch screen goes into a bag and gets crushed by the truck again by itself. Everything bigger than that gets crushed, and then I just keep going through the screens. This sounds like more work than it is, and the stuff that doesn't really want to crush, that stays in larger sizes, I just pitch it in a thing, and then it goes into the next burn. Anything after two passes that still won't go through the quarter inch, it's either actual charcoal that I'm going to use like charcoal because it's what it is, or I just assume that it didn't get full. The reason it didn't crush, it didn't get fully pyrolyzed, so I don't really want it crushed. So I'll just set it aside, and then that stuff, because it's still fairly well-sized, that last, the next burn in a cone kiln, I put that right on the top because it doesn't need much to get it all the way there. And just by pitching it back like a moonshiner, pitching back some of your mash, is the way to think about it. This is not hard. And I had these two big doors that I pulled off of prior projects that had the screen on them, and they were heavy and bulky, and it really was a lot of work. When I made the two lightweight plastic ones, that's so, and I just realized, like, I missed a way to shorten this process, didn't I? And I've been doing this. I just need another set of the two 2x4s that hold it above. And what I should be doing is going through the half inch and dropping that into the quarter, and then the solid one on the bottom, and that would make it even faster. And I don't know why I didn't think about that, except I have been doing a lot of work lately, and sometimes you don't think as much. Now, Texas Plant Company says, when electric chipper shredder work great for me, needs to be super dry and wear a mask. Hey, dude, can you email me the exact model? And maybe I'll pick one up and give it a shot, okay? Because I if there is a way to automate this and make it faster, I want to try it. And if I find one that really – now, the has to be very dry and wear a mask thing, that worries me a little bit. But if you have a video you could share about that, dude, I would love that too, man. I really would. That would be awesome. And I'm getting these questions as fast as I can here. Anyway, Texas Plant Company, email me, man. TSPC in the subject line so I don't miss it. And if, like I said, if you just video, like have somebody half-ass video and send me a clip. It doesn't even have to be for the public. I would love to see it working and how it works. And someone kept talking about that's local about coming to one of my little workshops and bringing me some of the stuff they put through the garbage disposal. If you're listening, send me a video. I mean, if it, because the videos I've seen of people doing, I'm just like, that is a mess and I don't want to deal with it. All right. So, I want to kind of combine my next two bullet points into one. And a listener named Eric said, would you consider doing a show or a segment on why the U.S. is not imminently becoming a dictatorship and the U.S. is still the best country right now? My wife has been become completely consumed with fear of all freedoms being stripped in the U.S. to the point she is considering uprooting our family to some EU shithole. I try to refocus her on what has actually changed in your specific life, which is nothing. And by the way, women are terrible about this with Trump derangement syndrome. My daughters don't have the rights that I had. Which ones? They don't know. Reproductive rights. In what way? They don't know. They don't know. And if you wanted more reproductive rights, which really just means right to abortion, that's all that phrase means. There's states you can move to without going to fucking Europe, where you can have an abortion still up to like ridiculous. I am fairly neutral on this deal. My solution, I don't think would make anybody happy, but I absolutely believe that somewhere in this, there is a point of development that we have to look at that and biologically and medically, no religion involved go. That is a human being and that human being has protections. I'm not a moment of conception guy and nothing you say will change that. But I believe there's a point where that happens. I believe most Americans believe that. And there are states you can still live in where it's – because there's nothing else. There's nothing else that they can actually point to that's actually changed for women at all in this country. You know, unless you're a man that wants to be called a woman that's angry that the Supreme Court said we don't have to. I mean, that's mental illness. I can't help you if that's you. So let me go back to reading this. I've asked her what is actually changing your specific life, which is nothing. She falls back to the fear that martial law will soon be declared. You don't think they do that shit? They did a lot more martial law in Europe during COVID than we ever had here. I'm just telling you, okay? The border will be closed. Well, but I guess the inbound border is closed, but I assume they won't let you leave, I guess. This is nonsense, too. I don't know who she's listening to. Women will be forbidden from working or voting. Bro, I hate to put it this way. I think your wife needs some emotional counseling from a professional counselor. I'm not going to say she's crazy. I don't mean it that way. I'm just saying, like, people with that much anxiety, they're dealing with something internally, and you can't fix it. Because a prophet hath no honor in his own country. Like, professional counseling on this, because This is a disconnect from reality at this point. This is too much CNN or MSNBC or something. Alternative media, I don't know what it is, but it's too much something. And everything in the Handmaid's Tale will actually come true. Oh, for the love of God, you women with the Handmaid's Tale, will you please read another book? Please. And don't let it be 50 Shades of Grey. I feel like many people in your community, I have a spouse or other family members also completely debilitated with fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I bet you have some great insight on how to help them. Okay. What I want to combine that with was the thing I already had planned, prepper maturity versus going to the dark place. So this is actually the same problem that many people that are preppers have, just in a different way. They'll come up with something to justify the big stockpile of bullets and rifles and whatever else they're stockpiling. The UN's going to come take us. Like, it's the same thing. Like, the people that would mock this woman are doing the same shit. They're just filling in the blank of fear with something else. This is reality. It has never worked out that way. And am I completely unconcerned about my government becoming more totalitarian? No, I am concerned. And do I think that, you know, some of the things I'm about to say means it won't happen at all? No. But we have certain mitigating circumstances in this country that are absent in every other country in the world. And my wife might think I'm crazy, but if you ask me, where's the place I can go and be most left alone right now that's not the United States? It's probably rural freaking Russia. Not Moscow, right? No, rural Russia. And it's because there's so few people and so much land that there's not a lot of people to stick their nose in your business, that the government does not have the resources to send people out there. But the same can be said of a lot of places in the United States, in like Alaska and Montana and Idaho. And you can find just as much police state bullshit in all those states where lots of people live. So if you want to get away from people sticking their nose in your business, you have to get into a more dispersed population reduced zone. No matter where you go. But the European Union? Are you kidding me? The freedoms that we have in this country that don't exist in Europe, I could line up. You could get thrown in jail for insulting a gay person in the UK or Germany right now, or insulting a politician, or insulting just about anybody except white people. The UK is turning into an Islamic shithole. I'm serious. If you don't believe me, just start looking up what's going on. So is freaking Ireland. The part of Ireland that's not part of the UK, right? Like, all over Europe, this stuff's happening. Europe is not a safe place to be right now. Europe is going full fascist. While they're shrieking, Arsman's a fascist. What people in this mode need to understand is Donald Trump is not, I bet you she also thinks that Trump is going to, you know, somehow run for a third term. And it doesn't help that he is such a freaking troll. He's actually kind of piddled around with making statements like that just because he knows it will trigger the media to be stupid. And he's like Bugs Bunny in the one where he's got like the opera singer and he replaces the conductor and he's just like making them do all kinds of crazy shit. Like that's what Trump is to the media and to the left. It's just who he is. And I think he'd be better off not doing it, by the way, but it is kind of funny to see them react. This is just, I don't know what to tell your wife, man, because I don't think you can play this for her. I think this will upset her more, but I'm telling you, this doesn't make any sense. And where I want to blend this in with my other concept for today is, I got this guy working for me right now on my property. He's cutting a bunch of dead trees and stuff out for me and getting rid of them because my wife made my own case to me. You don't have time for this. And if you do take time for this, the amount of money you could have made working versus doing this is less than we're going to pay him. And I went, wow, you really do listen to me. Okay. You're right. Get him out here and get it done. Well, she told him on Monday what I do for a living. He didn't know. And he got very excited. He wanted to talk to me. And when he started telling me about all these people he's listened to before, and I'm like, yeah, I know him. I'm friends with him. He was like a little bit starstruck or whatever. Like, no, man, I'm just a dude, right? And we started talking, and he started telling me all his fears. And he's in the dark place the other way, right? We're going to have World War III. China's going to invade us. There's sleeper cells. He's listening to Redacted and, you know, Scott Horton and all this stuff where they hype all this stuff all the time because it brings eyeballs. And I'm like, let's just rewind this a second. How long could you not work before you were really financially in trouble? And he's like, a month, maybe two. I'm like, then you're not ready for the apocalypse. Because he had also said that thing that happens in prepper maturity where you go through this stage where you kind of almost want it to happen in some weird way. We even did shows about that early on. And I never really believed it, but I at least in my head sometimes would entertain that idea. Wouldn't we just be better off if it went ahead and blew? And so the people that can get shit done can actually get shit done and the other people that are causing all the problems would perish? And like, no, don't think that way. And he was, you know, am I crazy for thinking that way? I'm like, you're not crazy, but you are wrong. Because this was, you know, like, you know, what would happen if you were injured and couldn't work for 3 months? well, I'd pretty much lose everything I have. You're not ready for the apocalypse. You know, what if your power was out for a month? Would you lose all the food in your home? And we went through a whole bunch of scenarios that are far more likely to occur. And then I'm like, you use a chainsaw every day. He goes, yeah. And he was standing behind his truck, and I already knew what I was going to see, but I'm like, step out from there. So he steps out from behind his truck. I'm like, where's your chaps? He goes, oh, I used to have a pair, and I don't know. I'm like, how long do you think it takes to bleed out if you drop that saw on your femoral? And I'm like, he's like, pretty quick. I'm like, it's about 30 seconds. If you screamed and we heard you, by the time I got to you, there'd be nothing I could do for you. You'd already bleed out. You're not prepared. You're not prepared to do the job you're doing. And you're distracted by all these things the media is telling you. You just chose a different media other than CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC. You're in the same place that this lady, and I didn't have this email from this guy yet, so, but he's in the same place in a different way that this woman's in. The human fear center is very primal. It's very ancestral. And the human race has been through some horrific shit. Some of it natural and some of it man-made. It's only, you know, a couple 10,000 years, something like that, 20,000. So there's some point where the human genetics went through this bottleneck and we almost vanished from the planet. The Black Death killed about half of the people where it was. So there were people isolated from it, like, let's say, the New World. But in all of civilization that knew of the Black Death, it killed about one in every two people. It's a primal fear that's in us because it's real. And that's why the COVID fear was so effective. That's why we have a primal fear. Now, media, right, wants attention or it's useless. You can't make money without eyeballs. You can't survive as a media. And somebody says Spirico Media here. Yes, even me. I have to talk about things that get some of you to listen to me, or I can't make money and do what I do. But, you know, my thing is, how much money do I need to make a year? If I can make $120,000 a year, I can pay every bill that I can come up with and then some. I don't have to go to extreme measures. When I talked about the Entrepreneur Show this week. You know, if you're going to run a show where you have a staff, and you have payroll to make, you got to bring a lot more eyeballs. So what ends up happening is you figure something out that when I talk about one of these five things, the eyeballs come, and even if you don't want to do it, human nature takes over. And one of the things that will do it, actually the two number one things that do it in our modern age, outrage and fear. And if you go look at your media, 90% of what they throw at you, even on the regular nightly news, even where it's not 90% fear, what do they use to get you to tune in? Fear and outrage. Why do you think talk radio is so popular? Because all they talk about is what the other side is doing, depending on what the show, you know, what show host you're dealing with, right? You got the NPR, it's all about the orange man. If it's you know, like Sean Hannity, or I'm trying to think, because I don't listen to any of Mark Levin or any of these guys, right? All the people that came after Rush Limbaugh that are still around. Then it's just outrage about the left all the time. No, nothing but it over and over again. This woman and this young man are both caught up in the same cycle. And the problem with being caught in that cycle is it always leads to dumb decisions. It always leads to dumb outcomes of belief. So it leads this young man who's working hard in building a business right now to think the most important thing is beans, bullets, and band-aids for his freedom and his safety and his future. What's the most important thing for that young man? Build that fucking business. Build that business. He's leaving all of the big pieces of wood for firewood for me. And when I asked him to, the next words out of my mouth were, but do you sell it? Is there any value to you in you having it? Because he's hauling away all the slash and shit in the back of a trailer. And yes, I can make biochar out of it. No, it's way too much material for me to fucking deal with. I got to get rid of it. So the fact that he included it in the price, fine, take it away. Leave the big chunks. I'll make biochar out of that shit. But my next, you know, and then I found out he's renting a house. It's not a very big yard. So there's no real place to stockpile. I'm like, you should find somebody to sell it to. Even if it's somebody that somebody else is selling the firewood to the final customer, and even if they're paying you 10% of it's all money. It's all money that you already have. And he's looking at getting one of the really big chipper shredders. And I'm like, these are the, if you want resiliency in your life, building that business, building your book of business, your customer base, your reputation and your brand, that will do more to secure your future than anything else. But he's worried about Chinese sleeper cells and shit, right? Now, this woman seems totally different, but she's like, the outcome decision is just as disconnected from reality. I want to go to the EU so I can be more free. 90% of the things that the left bitches about being restricted in the United States are actually restricted in the EU and not restricted here. I mean, you know, the biggest thing they've gotten women wrapped up with is this abortion thing. And it's amazing how many like postmenopausal women are worried about it, right? Or how many lesbian women are worried about it or whatever. Like, I don't think this applies to you. What's about others? And then they live in California where literally nothing changed for them at all. Nothing. And they're still worried about it. And it doesn't make any sense. But if you start looking at abortion limits in a lot of these European countries, they're far more restrictive in their national way than our national way. Right? And when you have to show ID to vote, yeah, most of those countries you have to show ID to vote. And so I don't know what this gal thinks she would gain by moving to the EU over living in the United States. I really don't. And this is about mental sovereignty. And so I don't think, again, to the guy that wrote into me, I don't think you should let your wife hear what I had to say today. I think that you should find one of my shows on mental sovereignty in a more general way. And that is what she needs. And that she might be open to. And it makes me think, we haven't done one of those in a while. So maybe next week, one of my shows will be, do I have time next week? Because I'm going to Tennessee next week. I got Monday and Tuesday next week. Maybe I will do a show next week on mental sovereignty that doesn't hit so hard to the person with the problem. It's a lot like my book, right? My book doesn't say this is how to build a business or this is how to build a reputation. It's like these are the guideposts. And if you do these things, then you can turn it into whatever you want. Because this is a lack of mental sovereignty. This is letting somebody else literally put thoughts in your head that do not match reality. And I actually like more input on people with that problem in your lives. Email me about it. Tell me what's going on. TSBC the subject line. And of course, email me. What's your email? jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. Anybody tells me, I listen to you all the time, man. What's your email? I'll send you an email. I'm like, I can't help you. I don't believe you unless I know you when you say that. I have the most public email address in the world. It's jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. There is no, there are other emails, but they all go to the same hole. Like, I don't have like one for the business and one for friends. Everybody emails the same place because I consider my audience my friends to a degree. Dan, the delivery man, has a question, but only the word question. It's not going to get it, Dan. You got to give me the actual question. And now would be the time to do it because I'm going to do Q&A as soon as I wrap up with the closing sponsor segments. I want to again remind you about Laws of Life. If you want mental sovereignty, this book will give it to you in spades. If you want a success formula, this book will give it to you in spades. You can't buy the education that I base this book on. It's not possible because there is no school for it. There is no curriculum for it. This took 3 decades of brutal trial and error to develop this book. It will transform the way you look at the world. And if you don't think you need it for yourself, I bet you know a young person. I mean, if you're 15 to 35, this book is definitely, it's for everybody, but it's definitely for you if that's it. And Dan, the delivery man, get that question in, bro. You're running out of time. Next is our item of the day today. You know, I do these reviews for you. I ask you to start your online shopping at tspaz.com because no matter what you buy, you'll help me out. It doesn't cost you any more money. And it can, got you there, Dan. And it can save you money too if you're buying from Vavor, because I have an extra discount code that gets you 5% off. You also get authentic, real reviews. And if I would not buy something, I would not recommend it to you. I just won't. And I do things that I don't think most other people would do. Even if I'm going to make less money, I tell you to buy from the place that's going to be best for you. This is one of those products where on any given day that might change. There's only about $5 difference in price, but I'll tell you straight up, when I send you directly to Vavor, I make about twice as much money than I do on Amazon. But right now you might actually save a few bucks buying this on Amazon, because at least when I wrote the article last night, it was on a limited time deal on Amazon for like $6 off the Vavor direct price. So I don't think 5% will make that up. So you might want to check pricing on both. But today's item of the day is the Vavor 6.5-inch heavy-duty bench vise. This thing is a beast. And I just really came to the conclusion recently, like, your little clamp-on vise sucks. Sometimes you need more power. So get a vise. And I'm like, well, don't go buy a little 4-inch vise or something like that. Buy a serious vise. When I started looking for what I really wanted, which was somewhere between like 6 and 7 inches, 6.5 right in the middle, but I wanted like a good anvil on it. I wanted 360-degree rotation. I wanted it to open big enough for Joe Pesci to use it, okay? And what have you. I started looking at them, and well-made vices like that, $150 to $200 and more. And I'm like, I wonder what Vavor has. So I looked this up, and I'm like, you know, it's really hard to mess up a vise. Like, if they have something, I'll give it a shot. Found this one, $71, and it's reversible. And what, if you watch, I have a video with the review. If you watch, what I mean by that is literally you can open it as far as it'll go and keep going until the whole vise comes out, spin that 360 rotation around and put it back in the other side. And now you get almost 10 inches of gap. Like I said, Joe Pesci would approve. And you can, you know, then you've got the anvil, you've got a work surface on top. This thing is really great. A vise is something I think that every DIY homesteader homeowner should own. When you need a vise to get something done, usually nothing else will work. It's one of those tools that when you don't have it, you don't realize how useful it would be when you do. And when you really need it, you know, you're sitting with two pair of vise grips trying to get something unstuck or something. A vise really just works well for that. So check the video out. It really is one of the best deals that there is in the market right now. And we talked about tariffs today. If you're thinking I would like one someday, maybe someday should be now, because all of that shit is coming from where? China. And I don't understand right now how that vise can be shipped from China and delivered to my house for $70. I already don't get it. The weight weighs 30 freaking pounds. And that was the cost delivered. So I don't understand how I was able to get it for that price. But I really recommend that if you want a good quality vise, this would be the way to go. Right? This would be a great deal. And eventually they will sell that inventory out. And either those products are not going to be coming in from China, or they're going to be coming in, like I said, if it's a 10% or 20% tariff, a lot of that can get eaten up by the supply chain itself driving costs down and taking a little less margin. I think the tariffs on China right now are near 200%. That can't be gotten rid of. Like, the inventory that's here is going to be the lowest price you're going to pay on stuff like that, unless somebody makes a deal for quite a while. So I would go ahead and get on it while you can. All right, now, Builder of Castles says, I can't ship it to your house from the States for that price. No, and there's a scale thing there going on where they have special deals with like UPS and all. That's what that is. They're giving them so much business, they're not paying what you pay. That's how they get the shipping done. But to ship it from, I mean, if it was a chunk of 30-pound chunk of cast iron, I don't get getting it from China to my house for 70. I don't understand how people make money doing that. Only in a fiat world, I guess, with a devalued yuan on the other side. All right, with that, let's go ahead and take some questions. I think I got six here. I'm going to go kind of rapid fire quick so we can get wrapped up. We're at an hour and a half today. Jesse says, what about fabricating a giant version of a pepper grinder? He's talking about the biochar crushing. And I'll tell you that that's kind of why I'm thinking that the mill, the flour mill, the grain mill from Vavor might work. Because that's essentially, it's kind of like a giant burr grinder on the vertical instead of the horizontal, like a coffee burr grinder in a way. And it has separation distances of the plates. And it might work really well for that. And as long as it doesn't make a giant cloud of dust, hey, it might work. So I'm going to think about it. I don't know if I'm going to ask the Lord to send me one or just buy it, because I don't know that it'll work. And if it doesn't work, I think I would kind of be ripping Vavore off, wouldn't I? Like, I know it's not going to really sell well because of what I'm going to do with it. So I think if I decide it's worth the risk of the money, I might just buy one. Question, where do I find your biochar class? This is from Trial and Error. You can't yet. It's not available yet. I just apologized to Tom the other day because he makes money off of the courses at Home Food Systems. And I have not gotten that course completed in a timely manner. And I'm still going to be quite a while out on it. I'm still going to be at least a month. So we're going to be at least a month out. The good news is you can find the other classes that are already available. And one of them's free. And they're all at the same place, homefoodsystems.com. And I will keep working on the biochar course, I promise you. But honestly, in the last few weeks, everything has gone toward getting the book out. Peter says, the screening method and crushing and feed bags worked great for me too, Jack. You're a jerk. Yeah, when you screen it, and I didn't really explain that, it's about aggregation. When you end up with that bag and you've got little dust particles and a little bit bigger particles and BB size and like quarter inch, and that's all the stuff that would work and it doesn't need to be crushed anymore, and you don't get it out of there, and then you have stuff that would go through half inch but not quarter inch, and you got stuff a little bit bigger than half inch and you got big pieces, and you're driving that truck back and forth over it, what happens is all those aggregates start to compact instead of crush because there's no space. There's no empty space. Everybody finds their own little niche, and it all works out. So if you were to put biochar like that into a jar and or you know something you could see through without breaking and kind of crush it down, eventually you'd see all the space gone. It would become very hard to crush it. But if you put a whole bunch in there that was the size of, let's say, a shooter marble, the bigger marbles, all that space, when you crushed it, there's a place for it to go. So by screening it out in stages, you allow the gap to exist so you're not compacting, you're actually crushing. Because that char is actually really easy to crush. It's like crushing eggs, except it's just a little bit harder. And when once you get that aggregation and that fill, you're basically like, it's like you're compacting road base. And it just doesn't work. So that little tiny decision to start screening, like I'm like, what? I initially didn't even think about it scientifically. I was just like, why am I bothering to try to crush shit that's already good? And as soon as I took it out and I drove, I could hear it out the window of the truck. I'm like, oh, dummy. Yeah. Start thinking, Jack. You know, for such a smart guy, sometimes you don't think. And the way my father-in-law used to put it, they refuse to use their God-given brain. And sometimes we all do it. So always try to remember that. Angie says, did you see the one made out of 4 or 6 inch PVC with a centerpiece that has a bunch of chain links on it? You then hook it to a drill and spin the chains inside. I did see that. And I know the guy that made it. He was at not Living and Free in Tennessee, the Self-Reliance Festival that Nicole Sloss did with John Willis about 2 years ago. I met him. He's the one I learned about making the little kilns out of the 50-gallon drums by just cutting in half and bending a little lip over the sides with. He gave me a big bag of cutoffs from bats, and that's his biochar preferred material. He's using white ash. There's a company very close to him that makes baseball bats, and he goes by once a week and picks up like 2 garbage cans full of cutoffs. When they take the bat off the lathe, you end up with these 2 knobs, and you have to cut it off each end. And he gave me a bag of those, and he was a really cool guy. And I think that works. I just don't know that it works good enough to be worth it. But I do think it's a good idea, but I think it needs maybe some work. It's also very noisy, and you have to keep putting it back through. And I'm telling you, if you try screening it and bagging it, it once you have your system down, it's hard to beat. And the other thing to realize is, let's say you did it twice, and some of it was still kind of big. There actually is no problem throwing that in your garden or using it like regular biochar, as long as it's inoculated or into your compost. It will break down over time. Do you think the people that made Terra Preta worried about putting their biochar through a quarter-inch screen? We're just trying to speed up the process. We're trying to stack in time and space is what we're doing in the permaculture way. Amy says, number one fruit tree spray recipe, hot pepper. Spray this before or after bone sauce. Thanks, Jack. Well, thank you for that. That is a good tip, but I don't know where it fit into the show. Or that is a question. I get it now. So she's saying fruit tree sprays that are made out of hot pepper. to repel insects. Should you spray this before or after bone sauce? I got you now, Amy. I would spray it after the bone sauce. The primary purpose of the bone sauce is to keep away deer. And so you want that lying underneath. Your pepper spray is really going to be about right before bud break, right after bud break, and right after food set. So you're only going to do that three times, and you're really mostly worried about doing that up in the foliage, and your bone sauce is, you're more worried about your browse level and down the trunk, because a freaking deer will eat the freaking cambium off the damn tree. Not so much in the growing season, but when things get really lean, that's a big problem with deer. So I would definitely go with the bone sauce first if it was me, Amy. And Don the delivery man, how can you track your Muscovy ducks on 1 acre easily movable water system? Depends on how many, and it's always going to be a problem. They don't have to be able to swim. Okay, they do absolutely have to be able to get their heads wet. So you can create a watering system that allows them to get their heads wet, but not swim, and they will be okay. And as waterfowl go, the problems that occur because they don't get their heads wet and the glands of their eyes wet and everything are less problematic among Muscovies than they are among mallard breed ducks, which all other domestic ducks are mallard breed genesis ducks. They all come from the mallard. So they have a much higher requirement, but it needs to happen frequently, like weekly, for them to be truly healthy. And they really do need to swim to be happy. So an acre isn't actually that big. So if you were to set up enough water access, so wherever you have water access on your house, run pipe. And again, an acre, I'm thinking like, you know, with 50-foot or 100-foot hoses, you don't need that many pop-up hose bibs. And if it's a reasonable amount of Muscovies, let's say, I mean, whatever's going to fit in the tractor can only be so much, right? So then you could just do what I do, which is use the Rubbermaid tubs. Or they're not really Rubbermaid tubs, the concrete mixing tray tubs. That's the most economical, long-lasting solution that I've found. And, you know, if you had two tubs in there, that probably works. The problem with that is they're going to make a lot of duck mud, because they're going to be in one place so long. Ideally, you would move them twice a day. You come out in the morning and move them, and then about midday or at least after work, you'd move them again, at least this time of year where you got long days. And it depends on how many and how many tractors. That's something you kind of have to work out, that, you know, no battle plan, surviving contact with the enemy type of thing. Anyway, with that, I appreciate everybody that tuned in today. I hope you enjoyed the variety today. I hope it makes you think. I really do want to do another show on mental sovereignty. And I don't need to be telling anybody stories or anything, but if you have people that are having some real problems right now from an emotional and mental standpoint with fear, driven by media and stories, whether it's like the tree trim dude or whether it's like this guy's wife that wrote in, no matter if it's leftist or rightist, it doesn't matter. It's the same fundamental core issue. And the more I hear, the more I'm able to understand what people are afraid of, the more I can tune that show of mental sovereignty to still be generic. And not, because this is what you can't do. Hopefully I made this clear when I answered that question. You can't approach that person with, you're crazy, right? You can't approach that person and just say, everything you believe is wrong. They won't listen to you. What you can do is give them much higher level ideas about how to think, and then hopefully they'll apply it to their own lives. I'm pretty good at talking people off the ledge when they're receptive to the message. When they've decided they do not wish to be receptive to that message, I'm no better at it than anybody else. Okay. Of a commercial washer, which design of kiln should I fabricate it into? I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know what that means. I mean, I don't know. Like, if it's stainless steel, I might not make a kiln out of it. I might do something else out of it, because you can make a kiln out of a freaking $15 steel drum. And yeah, after a season or so, it'll burn out and you can go get another one. Stainless steel is freaking expensive. So my question would be, unless you're going to make something like a hookway retort or something like a long-term higher level kiln, how many barrels could you buy for the scrap value of that thing? Or what else could you do with it? Like, I really don't know. If you want to send me a picture of it, Jesse, with something for scaling it, so I understand a little bit more about how it's shaped and what it looks like and what that means, I'll see if I can put some thought into it for you. With that, take care, guys. I will have an expert counsel show for you tomorrow, which means it will not be a live stream on YouTube. We'll have a Friday flashback. Next week's going to have a bit of interruption in it. I don't have an interview on Wednesday because I'm flying out Wednesday. So I've got a show. I'll have new shows for you Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday will be a rewind. Thursday, I think I have enough material to go ahead and get it done and pre-do the expert counsel for you. Expert counsel and Friday flashback. So should, I'm not guaranteeing it, but should only have one rewind for you while I'm gone next week. With that, just again, please consider getting involved as an ambassador with Laws of Life. Even if you just do the silver, and that just means you buy one and you send one. And if you don't want it for yourself for whatever reason, you're welcome to send two to two different people. But the ambassador program is big on launch day or at least launch week, because if we do this right, we're going to hit bestseller in at least one category, and that's going to help us reach a broader market. Thank you to all of you that have already committed to that. It's a big deal to me. It means a lot. Thank you very much. Take care, guys, and again, I'll catch you with that expert show tomorrow. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.